Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at cashfly.com. This is Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, Episode 7 for May 26th, 2006. Jimmy Wales of Wikipedia. With another Floss Weekly, free Libra and open source software, and Mr. Floss himself. I think you should have a little bobblehead doll with Chris DeBona's head, and it should say Mr. Floss on it.
Don't forget the floss.
Don't forget the floss. Chris DeBona is here. Hello, Chris.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming again.
Yeah, we have a good one this time. Why don't you tell us?
It is good. It's a little not quite all open source, but I think it. So today we've got Jimmy Wales from Wikipedia. The founder of the Wikipedia project and Newpedia before it. And it's funny because it's not your traditional sort of he's an open source person the way that, say, Miguel was.
Right. And yet I think the spirit behind Wikipedia is very similar to the spirit behind the open source movement.
Well, I mean, as he says in the interview, I mean, it's clearly informed by it.
Right. So. Right. And of course, MediaWiki, the software they use, is open source. In fact,
yes, and they're actually taking part in the Summer of Code, I'm happy to say.
Oh, that's good. So, what is the Summer of Code?
Oh, you know, we could actually do a whole show about that.
Let's.
And I think that we should.
Okay.
Because we haven't focused enough on me, Leo. No. it's our program at Google to introduce students to open source software. We just approved 629 students to work for 100 different projects, one of which is MediaWiki.
Really?
And what by getting accepted, what that means is if they meet the goals of their application to the satisfaction of the mentor, they get paid $4,500.
Wow. So they will spend this summer off from school working on code, and that's actually a pretty good summer job.
Is these are people who need a summer job, right? And instead of going and getting a job, you know, doing burger flipping or whatever, you know, they can work on computer science, which is what, you know, we as an industry want them to do, right?
It's good for the industry.
And what
it's
a better way than
source.
Have them work on open source, right?
I think that's fantastic, so. Yeah.
Yeah. We can talk about that later.
Let's. And maybe get some of the kids on to talk about their projects. Some of the ones that you think are the most interesting.
That would be really cool.
I would like to
do
that.
That's a great idea.
That could be kind of a benefit for them. You know, they get some publicity. So let's, without further ado, you know, I always thought, I don't know, maybe it's because of the name Wales. I always thought he was a Brit. He's not from Great Britain. Jimmy Wales is actually
from, like, in Florida,
from Alabama, but which is completely not Great Britain. But he does have a little bit of an accent. At first, I thought it was a British accent, but now I'm realizing it's his Alabama roots coming out. We asked him, of course, to talk about starting Wikipedia.
It actually grew out of the prior project that I had called Newpedia, which was the same vision to create a freely licensed encyclopedia, but we didn't have the same social model, really, or understanding of how to get it to happen.
And was Newpedia a wiki, or was it some other format?
Complete format. There was no wiki to it at all. It was a very top-down hierarchical system. We had a very complex content management system with lots of controls and permissions and all that kind of stuff.
There was your mistake.
So it was more like a big, you had all access control rolled in there. And
exactly.
And was it based on any software before? I mean, you know, because
designed just for the Newpedia project, and it was just basically a priori design based on, you know, 7-stage review process that
although at some point in the last year you must have thought, boy, maybe we should have gone back to that.
no, not at all. It was really way overkill. And you know, in our defense, I will say, it seemed like the most sensible thing to do at the time. I don't think anybody ever realized that, you know, something could function in this fashion.
Why did you want to create a create an encyclopedia?
Well, I think, you know, there's several ways to answer the question. One important facet of it is that, you know, I had been watching the growth of the free software movement and seeing what people were able to do, volunteers working collaboratively over you know, months and years, basically always improving things, and you know, built something that could basically run the internet. And I was just thinking a lot about collaboration and what other kinds of things people might be able to do. And then, of course, just the idea that everyone in the world should have free access to basic knowledge struck me as a very worthwhile goal that I really wanted to take part in.
Had you been inspired by, so we interviewed Rob Malda here before, and as you know, there was the Everything and Everything 2 project. I mean, none of these things sort of like came out of nowhere. You know, everyone had read Hitchhiker's Guide. Had you seen Everything before that, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, Everything was always linked from Slashdot.
Yeah, sure,
and,
that's right.
So, you know, I had seen it and watched it, you know, with great interest. The Everything model is really cool. And what it does really well, but it didn't seem to be producing a direction that was leading towards a, you know, high quality encyclopedia, but more of a hybrid sort of fun, witty,
yeah, it was more like a
thing,
sort of a,
you know?
Very funny subset with a subset of that community interacting with each other. Yeah, so.
Is that still around?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's just it's its own little place on the internet. You know,
why is it that Everything didn't take off and Wikipedia did? Do you think?
Well, I think it really boils down to you know, that the content of Wikipedia,
sure,
because we focused on the idea of an encyclopedia from the very beginning, you know, it became very usable very quickly for people for very practical uses, whereas Everything is a lot of fun, but it may not be so usable to people who are not part of that community. It's kind of a fun, cool thing rather than somewhere you just go because you need to know something.
So by saying using the word encyclopedia, you sent a message to people that we want serious content.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
and then, of course, there are also other details about the social model. I haven't used Everything in many years, so I don't remember exactly how it works, but I know there's some kind of a voting and there's, you know, two entries that sort of compete with each other and things like that. Whereas what we've always done is collaborative editing. So it's a lot different.
Yeah. I think actually the intention of Wikipedia, we want to be an encyclopedia. I mean, you said that from day one, it does make a huge difference. Cause if you look at the two sites, when they both started, they loaded the old encyclopedia that was available to everybody. I guess the 1922 Britannica, is that what it was? When you started with
public domain.
Wildly diverged, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really fascinating to look at the two sites. I mean, Wikipedia is clearly an astonishing achievement, right, compared to Everything, which is a fun little site off on the corner. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about that.
No, I think it's actually interesting just to see how they diverged. I mean, and Wikipedia clearly is the success, you know, and Everything is fine. But as you say, it's marginalized.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Were you looking to make a business, Jimmy, or were you trying to? What were you trying to accomplish? Was it just something fun to do?
A little bit of both. You know, this was Newpedia was launched really in the height of the .com era, and Wikipedia was launched in the height of the .com crash. So,
right there, that's
expectations changed a fair amount in between. Yeah, I mean, originally it was just a project. I didn't really give a whole lot of thought as to what it would become or. You know, whether it should be a business or a nonprofit. Later on, it started to make a lot of sense to do it as a nonprofit, just because it's so volunteer driven. There was because of the .com crash, there was no obvious way for me to raise any money in the meantime while it was starting to grow, other than to ask for donations from the participants. And so, to do that, you really need to do it in a nonprofit model. So, and I also think it might not have been as nearly as successful without having that. I think it gives people a sense of trust about what it is that we're doing and what we're planning to do.
So one of the things that I've sort of wondered more recently than before is, what kind of architecture are you looking at? I mean, you have the open source code for MediaWiki, which is awesome and great. We'll talk about that maybe a bit later in the podcast, because this is Floss Weekly, right? But I've sort of wondered about the architecture of the site. I mean, are you comfortable talking about, like, how many servers? Do you have many data centers? Do you have one? I mean, how do you roll this thing out and grow it, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, all of that information is kind of fun if you're into it. You can look it up on the website. There's all kinds of tons and tons of information about it. Right now, we've got about 200 servers. They're split up into four data centers. So we have servers in South Korea, we have servers in Florida, and Paris, and Amsterdam. the bulk of the site is run from Florida. The servers that are in Asia and Europe are used primarily as squid caches, although we do have now some of the Asian language databases have actually been moved to the South Korean facility. And it's, you know, it's very standard, you know, LAMP stack. Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, with a lot of, you know, cool things like we're using some caching daemon stuff that first came from LiveJournal.
Memcached, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Memcached. Okay. And so it's a nice point of pride for our developers that everything we do on the website is all free licensed software. And that's kind of cool to think about what we've been able to do.
It's really remarkable. And what's great about Wikipedia is, I mean, I use it all the time. It's become a wonderful source. I'm just looking at your own article about you, which obviously you didn't write, others wrote. And even the founder of Wikipedia can have, you know, dissent. There are negative points in the article and so
yeah,
forth.
Yeah, I try not to read it myself.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, but that shows the power of it, is that it really is community.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, no, it's really interesting. Yeah. Sometimes people have, you know, I'm giving a talk and they'll, you know, take my bio from Wikipedia and have that up on the website, you know, to, I'll always say, yeah, you know, I don't agree with all of that. So let me send you my puff piece bio to promote for the conference. You know, that's a little too neutral.
I do the same on my page. I have an official bio and then I have the Wikipedia bio it's great.
Yeah.
To
and
have
I mean,
that.
And both have a valid purpose.
Exactly,
I mean,
yeah.
It's funny. You know which one's more up to date, though.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. Sometimes I have to go look things up in Wikipedia to make sure I get it up to date. So,
yeah.
How many people are working on it? You have different tiers, right? You have editors.
Right.
How many of them are there?
Well, it's really hard to measure. It's really hard to count, you know, how many volunteers there are on Wikipedia because, you know, if you go there as an anonymous IP number today and you make one edit, do you count as a volunteer? Well, in some sense, yes, but really that I wouldn't count that. And then we can look at, you know, really active users, so people who are making at least 100 edits in a month. We can look at administrators. Those are people who have been elected by the community to have a little bit more power. So, you know, there's around 900 active administrators in the English Wikipedia. There's a few thousand, say 2,000 to 3,000 people who are making around 100 edits a month. And that's really the core community.
It's amazing.
How often do you, so when you transitioned from just English language to international, did you hit any bumps for the multi-character support? I mean, you must have hit something.
Oh, yeah. Well, very early on, we had a commitment from, even from the Nupedia days, to be in all languages. And so from very early on, we wanted to be UTF-8 and have support for, you know, character sets and things like that for as many languages as possible. And yeah, there were bumps. So for example, it took us about a year. We were about a year late launching the right to left languages. So, because getting that support for the right to left languages sorted out was kind of difficult. Actually the English, was not in UTF-8 for the longest time. It was really annoying because
the straight ASCII. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, exactly, Latin 1. The reason for that was simply that to shut down and convert everything would have taken, you know, like 24 hours, and we didn't want to go offline for 24 hours, so we had to wait until somebody, you know, figured out a way to do it piecemeal on the fly as we were going. Wow. So we went through a sort of a conversion process on the fly. For a couple of days, the software had to be able to take both and make sense out of it. And it was a long process. Somebody much smarter than me figured out how to do it finally. So
has Wikipedia never been down?
Oh, not for any length of time. We have had a couple of major outages. We've had some cases where we lost power in the colo a couple of times, even a couple of times recently that were fortunately that they weren't for that long. We once had a database crash. Back in the very early stages of the project when we only had three servers, there's the infamous Christmas Day crash when two of our three servers died on the same day. That was the first time we had a public fundraiser, you know, and has the public for money.
Yeah. We need more servers, damn it.
Now, right, we're dead, you know. We were able to, at that time, we raised about $20,000 to get 8 or so new machines that, really put us off on a much stronger track after that.
Yeah. I imagine there'd be a howl of pain if it were down for any length of time now.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of fun because the community really lives in IRC channels. So we're all on IRC. And if you go to the main English language IRC channel, if Wikipedia goes down, you know, the number of people in the channel goes from 250 to 400 almost instantly. And then, that's the maximum. And so then there's an overflow channel. And it hurts when Wikipedia is down.
Is the MediaWiki PHP and MySQL based?
Yes, yeah.
And there was never any question in your mind that was the way to go?
Well, when we first started, we used a different wiki package, UseModWiki, which was really good. It was Perl based. It was easy to install. It was wonderful for our initial needs, but it didn't scale very well. And so I was a Perl guy from way back. I didn't even know PHP, so I wasn't so sure about the move to PHP. But somebody, you know, it's typical in the free software world, rough consensus and running code. Yeah. I could say I want to stick with Perl, but somebody else actually rewrote the entire site in PHP and using a proper database back end. And there was... You know, there was no question we were going to switch to that.
It's very convincing when they have something working in front of you.
Yeah, it actually worked, and I was talking about doing something, so it was like, okay, you win. You wrote it, so that was a long time ago. That was Magnus Mansk's Phase 2 software, we called it. And that was a complete rewrite. In the old UseMod days, I haven't kept up with UseMod in recent years, but it stored everything in flat files. And in fact, the original search engine was essentially grepping through the files. So you can imagine that works pretty well when you've got 100 articles. It doesn't work so well for 10,000.
I was going to ask you about that, because even now it seems like you delay the search freshness a bit. So how are you doing?
Yeah,
like replicating it?
Right now what we're doing, and now we're getting beyond my actual detailed knowledge because, for a long time now, the tech guys are much better than I am, and they are always changing and fixing things. But we're using Lucene Search.
Great package.
And so we feed all the changes into Lucene, and there is a little bit of a delay, and we're trying to get rid of that delay, and that's just one of the ongoing projects. But our intention. I mean, the real interesting challenge for search in a wiki is the active users, they really need live search. I mean, they need to look for things that were just now changed, and they want the most current versions in the search engine. And so that imposes quite a challenge on you to always track things. What we used to do is just use the straight MySQL
full text searching,
full text search, and that just didn't scale well at all. It was fine for a while, but once you get enough traffic and you get enough content in there, it was just way too slow and way too heavy. Lucene's incredibly lightweight in terms of we're able to run, for the searching, we're able to run on a fraction of the hardware we used to. So that was a huge plus when we switched to that.
Well, it's funny, we're talking about all this open code, but it's not just the code that's open with Wikipedia. Anyone can use the data itself, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Everything is freely licensed. All of the text is under the GNU Free Documentation license. Most of the images are also under that license. And then we also allow some of the Creative Commons licenses, the ones that would qualify under the GNU definition of free. We allow those. It's a really important part of the project. For a number of reasons, I think it really empowers the volunteers because everybody knows, if I don't do a good job or the leadership of the community doesn't do a good job in leading the project forward, people can fork and leave. It's also a guarantee to the volunteers that everything they do will always be in the commons. You know, they're not contributing to something that's going to become proprietary. And
that's like Gracenote did and those kinds of
things. Exactly. No, it's really important to the volunteers to say, if I'm going to pour a certain amount of my life into this, I'll do it because it's a fun hobby, but I also want to know that it belongs to the community.
Well, there's been some really cool offshoots, like there's versions of Wikipedia you can bring up on your Treo, and it's fascinating where it pops up.
Oh yeah, it's everywhere. If my cell phone didn't suck so bad, I would probably use it on my phone all the time.
Jimmy's famous for saying we make the internet not suck, but he can't make cell phones not suck.
Yeah, I haven't figured that one out yet.
How do you have issues with copyright? With DM, do you get DMCA notices and that kind of thing? I imagine that's got to be difficult to manage.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so bad. I mean, we have a very firm rule against copyright violations, and in fact, our social rules go even further than that, rules against plagiarism, which would extend further than just copyright violations. I mean, you can plagiarize something without it being a copyright violation. But yeah, there's constant policing. The community does a great job of hunting for these things. If we get a notice, we just deal with it very quickly. And, you know, the same thing for libel and things like that. We try to be pretty aggressive about making sure that we're within the confines of the law, because you know, what we're trying to do here is not copyright activism in that sense. You know, it's we're not trying to be Napster, with a whole bunch of content, you know, ganked out of Britannica or something like that. We take great pride in that we wrote it ourselves. You know, that means something to us.
Did you enjoy that nature study that compared you to Britannica?
Yeah, that was the funny story about that was this came out just after the whole John Siegenthaler scandal, where we had a really bad error.
Oh, that's right. Some reporter put in something about John F. Kennedy or something?
Yeah, no, what happened was there was a somewhat prominent journalist, a great guy, John Siegenthaler, who he found a really bad error about him in Wikipedia that somebody had put in as a joke. I'm sorry about that phone ringing.
Do you want to go ahead and get it? And we'll just edit that out.
Yeah, you can edit. That's great news.
It's fortunately it's not live. So.
Okay, hold on.
Mine does that all the time too.
Yeah, we can just start from the. What was the story about that?
I'm in the middle of an interview, and when you get home, I'll probably still be in the interview. But what's going on? Oh, okay, cool. Where are you guys?
Make a note to edit this at.
Oh, I think
okay. Well, I'm in my office. Or we can just leave it on. Podcast interview. Edit stuff out. But when I finish this, I'll be done for the day. Okay. Bye.
There's always something to do.
Okay.
No problem.
All right. So let's start off at. So what was the story about the John F. Kennedy thing? Go.
Oh, right. So John Siegenthaler was a fairly prominent journalist who found a really bad mistake about him in Wikipedia. Somebody as a prank had inserted that he had
was a suspect in the assassination
that he,
of Kennedy.
Yeah, that he had been briefly suspected of something to do with the Kennedy assassination.
Which was absurd because he was an RFK aide and he was actually very offended by it.
Yeah, he was very offended, and he wrote an editorial for USA Today that was really flamed us. And, you know, it was the media attention was enormous. They dragged me on CNN to yell at me, and, you know, it was.
All of this was absurd because Siegenthaler could have just gone in and changed it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, but it's still not good to have that kind of error. I mean, we really took a look at our procedures to see how did that kind of an error slip through the process and what can we do to improve about that. But the funny part of the story that I was going to tell is that around this time, I had been in London visiting Nature, and I gave a talk there. And as a part of that visit, they interviewed me for this article, and they showed me the results, but they said, well, you know, this is under embargo. Please don't talk about it until we publish. So I knew this great positive story was going to come out of Nature while all the journalists are calling me up and raking me over the coals about how bad is Wikipedia and, you know, how dangerous is Wikipedia, film at 11, that sort of thing, right? And I had to sort of bite my tongue and say, yeah, it's, you know, there's actually some good news to this as well. So then when that came out, we were very happy. And then, you know, what's funny to us about that story too is that it has been misreported in the media quite a bit in a way that's too favorable to us. You know, people say, well, this Nature thing said you were just as good as Britannica. Well, actually, no. It said we were almost as good in certain areas, you know, which was good enough for us. I mean, we were very happy to see that we had reached that level of quality. We always want to be Britannica or better quality. We know we're not there yet, but it was something of a validation at a time when the media was basically, you know, portraying it as this crazy thing on the internet that no one can trust, to say, oh, you know what, actually it's not that bad. It's kind of good in parts, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Well, and I think it's particularly good on the hot subjects. One of the reasons Siegenthaler's error snuck by is because nobody was reading his biography. I mean, it went up for months, but nobody saw it.
Exactly. Right. What happened was it didn't get categorized. It slipped through the New Pages patroller somehow. And so it didn't go into a category. It wasn't linked to other articles. And so it just sort of sat there in isolation on the website for 4 months.
Right.
And I think a part of this is there's a big culture shift that's gone on. Mr. Siegenthaler is a great man. He was a First Amendment activist. But he's an older gentleman.
He didn't get
and,
it.
Yeah, and for him, to see something, if I see something crazy written about me on the internet, I just roll my eyes, it's like, well, that's the internet, right. There's all kinds of things. For someone like him, who's really used to a much more formal, traditional publishing process, it seemed a little shocking to him, and we can understand that.
Which raises an issue. Is the process used in Wikipedia going to replace the more traditional editorial process? Is it an adjunct to it? What does the future hold?
I think that's a very good question. The way I see it right now, the current Wikipedia process is pretty good at getting us 85% to 90% of the way there. If by there we mean, Britannica or better quality. Does it get us all the way there? Well, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And the real question is what can we add to our process, or how can we modify our process to get to that next level of quality? And this is something that we're always talking about in the community. We're always assessing what we're doing, thinking of ways that we could better identify problematic areas, better control for certain types of problem issues. It's an ongoing process. Whether some of that process eventually ends up looking a lot more like a traditional process, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, one of the interesting things about the Wikipedia model is that because everything's freely licensed, somebody can come along and say, hey, I'm gonna apply a more traditional editorial process on top of Wikipedia. And we'll be able to make use of that if somebody does something valuable.
When Microsoft created Encarta, they went out and they bought basically the cheesy grocery store encyclopedia and fixed it. Do you imagine that someday they might go? Somebody like that might come to you and say, can we start with this instead?
Well, didn't they try something similar where they put Encarta online? Or I don't even remember.
It is online.
Yeah, there was some. I mean, I try not to be too critical of Microsoft, but
no, I'm not going there at all.
Well, but I am. So here we go. Even though I said that, they had sort of announced that they were going to some wiki style thing, and they put up on Encarta where you could click to edit this page, you could get the text of the article, edit it, and hit submit, and then that was it. Maybe someday somebody might take your change and put it up on the website. And this got a lot of press, for a short period of time. Ooh, Encarta is becoming a wiki, but nothing came of it. And as far as I can tell, it hasn't made any impact on us.
I think they're really jealous of the lucrative Wikipedia market.
Yeah, well.
look at all those ads on Wikipedia.
Yeah, no, exactly. So.
But speaking of which, you created a company to start commercializing wikis, I believe. Would you like to talk about that? Is that based on the MediaWiki code?
Yeah, so this is Wikia, WIKIA.com, and we're using the same MediaWiki code from Wikipedia. One of the nice things about it is we've hired a development team to actually push forward on the code in certain ways that it's been difficult for the volunteer community to push forward. So just to talk about that a little bit, one of the well-known issues in the free software world has always been there's certain kinds of problems that are really interesting to geeky programmers and certain kind of problems that are not that interesting. And so we've had a hard time with applications on the desktop and figuring out, how do we make a user-friendly environment for everyone? If you're going to run Linux on your laptop, well, you better be pretty smart because it's still pretty hard. It's gotten better over the years, but that's been tough. Well, we have the same kinds of problems. Editing Wikipedia is really great for geeks. It's a lot harder for a lot of other people. And so we've wanted to kind of push forward on the usability issues. And so that's one of the things that we're doing right now at Wikia is a lot of programming effort going into ease of use and streamlining things so that it's, we get the technology out of people's way a little bit. And then basically the model is it's the same – social model as Wikipedia. I mean, one of the things that I believe is that running a wiki is, it's not easy. You know, you can throw up a wiki and there's no guarantee that it's going to become anything, and that really it's about community management and social practices, and that stuff is not obvious, and it takes a lot of experience that we've gained in our community just the hard way by doing it. And so we're hosting communities from everything from, you know, frequent flyer mile geeks to Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever people might be interested in that doesn't fit into the confines of a neutral encyclopedia.
I can vouch for the difficulty of this. I run a wiki for my radio show, which was wide open for a long time, and it was wonderful because the contributions of the listeners were very valuable. But a few vandals made it difficult for me to leave it open, and yes. Then spammers, and it really is. I agree with you. It's about the whole issue is not a technical issue. It's about managing a social group.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you know, you need a certain ratio of sort of responsible,
right,
active community members to every vandal. You know, we saw that in Slashdot like crazy.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, you said something interesting, Jimmy. You contrasted written rules to the kind of the social rules. Are those social rules unwritten?
Well, they're not really unwritten. They're written across thousands of pages in Wikipedia. Yeah.
You're reading Leo.
Well, I mean, but it's kind of common, considered that it's commonly understood. How do you create a valuable, constructive, social, context without, you know, and keep the vandals out?
Well, it's non-trivial, and it requires a lot of effort over a long period of time. But a lot of it is basically very simple principles that sound kind of corny if you just say them. You know, things like love and respect, and trying to be thoughtful with everyone, and you know, recognizing one of the keys is recognizing that many times when someone starts out vandalizing, they've got some issue or problem that if you can resolve that problem, they'll stop behaving in that way. And so sometimes it's a very human process of judging when you can say, you know what, we just have to give up on this person and block them from editing because they're impossible. And some people are just impossible.
But you try to convert as many people as you can. You don't block them right away.
Right. We try. And that's always a difficult balance, because if you're too, if you coddle people for too long, all they're doing is getting on the nerves of good contributors.
Right.
And if you are too aggressive about blocking people, well, you're turning people away and you run the risk of becoming very insular and sort of a clique. So how do you strike that balance? Well, that just requires a lot of dialogue and just a lot of talking and thinking and discussing.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, running a forum is very similar as well, and I run a number of forums, and the same issues come up.
Oh, yeah, exactly, the same issues. But I think there are some differences because, in a wiki, there is a certain incentive to compromise, to collaborate. You know, if you want your writing to survive, you have to write in a way that even people who disagree with you can accept.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in some ways, that makes it a lot easier, because already the software is sort of naturally pushing people into power and into positions of prominence within the community who are good at social cohesion and collaboration. Same thing is true with forums. I mean, one of the classic problems of unmoderated forums of all kinds, so Usenet or all mailing lists, is that eventually the flamers and the trolls take over,
right,
just because the good people just get exhausted. And you know, you open up your inbox every day and there's 150 messages and 100 of them are a flame war. You just get tired of it and leave the list. And with a wiki, you know, hopefully a lot of that stuff get cleaned up. So when you open up the wiki, you pretty much see the stuff that survived.
It's the clean window, or the theory of the non-graffiti theory.
Yeah, exactly. It's an old theory from criminology that, you know, says basically if people, if you take away the incentive to put up graffiti by keeping the place clean all the time, then you get less graffiti in the first place. Whereas if you let it stay up, then the people's incentive to do it just goes up, because now lots and lots of people will see it.
Do you have a spam problem at all? I mean, that's another big problem on my wiki.
Yeah, the interesting thing about spam issues and MediaWiki in particular are that our issues at Wikipedia are a lot different from most of the people who are reusing the MediaWiki software. The reason for that is we've got a huge community of people monitoring everything all the time.
Right, right.
And so if a spammer comes in and starts to spam, they get blocked and reverted very quickly. Whereas I've heard of a case, somebody in Croatia was telling me that his research group had put up a wiki just for their own personal use. They left it open. They didn't think anything about it. They didn't really even promote it or advertise it, but somehow a spam bot found
roaches
over the weekend, and they came in, Monday morning, and there were 8,000 spam pages created, and they had to go through and delete all that. And
I'm not joking at all about that. Last year for Summer of Code, somebody applied to take part at an organization. I think it was XWiki or somebody. And I was like, well, we'd love to have you take part, but you have a lot of web spam on your site. And they're like, oh my God, we didn't even know.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, oh, man.
Do you think some people have said that the internet is becoming a less civil place, that there are, as it becomes more universal, there are more and more people who come on who don't have any history or context there. They feel like anything goes, and that the civil discord is kind of disappearing. You certainly would see that more than anybody. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, no, I don't find that to be the case. I mean, I find there's lots and lots of good people. They far outnumber the bad people. The endless summer of AOL has been with us forever now.
Yes. Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
So, I lost my nostalgia for the good old days a long time ago. But
people who are new to this probably don't remember. But when AOL first opened its membership to the internet, it was a huge shift. And when people to use newsgroups, oh my God, everything changed.
Yeah, and what was interesting about that was they all came online at once, and it was just a big, sudden, sharp culture clash, basically. And I actually felt at the time it wasn't just that AOL was full of clueless newbies, but it was. But it was also just different culture,
Yes.
Different emoticons and ways of writing and things like that just seemed moronic and irritating to both sides,
so. And different expectations, a certain level of discourse that is not the same.
Yep, but ultimately for things that you do, the larger the number of people, the better, right?
In general, probably so, but it also is the case that a lot of social processes do start to break down as you get too many people involved. And so if you've got, 300 people all trying to discuss something at once, it's pretty hard to get a coherent discussion as compared to if 8 to 10 people are participating. And so in certain ways, when I look at what's going on right now in Wikipedia, and if you ask me where do I think the trouble spots are, I find them to be in areas where we've got too many people all focused on doing the same thing. And ultimately what ends up happening there is instead of having a dialogue, you end up voting on everything.
Mm.
And when you vote on everything, you've moved away from human interaction and into a sort of groupthink that can be kind of difficult. And those are some of the interesting problems that we face. We also have big problems within the community with communication. As we've become a very large community that's still very tight-knit, even so, it isn't the case that everybody hears everything from everybody every day the way we used to, and rumors get started and sort of boil over for a couple of days until they get squashed because people begin to realize that, gee, there's nothing to it. And so there are definitely problems with having a larger group, in addition to some of the benefits, of course.
Do you follow the wisdom of crowds and follow the social research in that area?
Yeah, a little bit. I've never been a really big fan of this sort of hive mind or wisdom of crowds rhetoric, because I actually think that the best work that goes on inside Wikipedia is far more traditional than people realize. It isn't thousands of people sort of anonymously interacting. It's actually a small handful of people who will take on a certain problem and say, okay, let's discuss this and decide it, in much the same way that you would have an editorial group at a newspaper or anywhere, a small group of people who are just having a dialogue and deciding things. So, it's an interesting sort of paradox there, I think.
Well, along those lines, as the population of editors and users of Wikipedia has grown, have you found that little corners of Wikipedia you never thought would pop up have, you know, like strange botany entries and that kind of thing?
Yeah, although strange botany entries you would have expected, right?
Yeah, well, you know what I'm trying to say.
Botany would get filled out. I know I've been really impressed with some of the more arcane areas. Information about trains is amazing in Wikipedia, and I guess I was vaguely aware that there were train fanatics and train spotters, but they actually exist.
Never realized. They
write amazing articles in Wikipedia.
Well, this is clearly a 4884 engine with the
yeah. See, you're revealing a little something there because there's these codes for how the wheels are and all that. Mm. Yeah, but. I guess one of the interesting fun things that I've seen recently is there was a page about a particular type of dog, a dog breed, where a huge fight broke out. And somebody pointed me to the page, and all of the Wikipedians, we were sort of standing around looking at this page, scratching our head, you know, who are these people? And what happened was some sort of a big fight from elsewhere on the internet came rolling through Wikipedia. And what was fun about it, all these anonymous IP numbers were on the discussion page. And what was really fun for us to look at about it is the number of cases where they were using internal, Wikipedia jargon to beat each other up. You know, that isn't NPOV, and you violated no original research. And we're like, who are these people? What are they fighting? Can't they at least log in? You know, so we blocked a bunch of people about that one. It was just ridiculous. Wow. But that was an interesting thing just to notice that. Wow, there are people who. You know, there's some quarrel about dog breeds that I would never have imagined, and yet it's somehow rolls into Wikipedia.
Aren't there pages on Wikipedia that are completely made up? As I seem to remember, there's some entries
like
that,
marketing oriented, like they're pretending like something's real that's just a television show and trying to put
or,
it off as
very
also
few.
Silly entries that are just people trying to kind of create something out of nothing with an entry in Wikipedia.
Yeah, very few. I mean, sometimes things do slip by us, but there's a lot of people really relish finding hoax entries and getting rid of them. So there aren't that many, I believe. Of course, there's 1.1 million articles, so I'm not going to say there are none, but pretty few. In fact, I mean, one of the interesting ones that was a press release today, and I won't embarrass the company by naming it, but they put out a press release saying. We've successfully published an article about our new software in Wikipedia.
Oh, dear.
And I'm like, oh, great. What is this? And I thought, well, whatever. It's just some company being stupid. And I went and looked. And turned out that the article had been deleted about a month ago using the normal process just because people said, well, this software isn't really notable and it deserves maybe a one-line mention in this other article about this type of software. And what they had done is recreated it policy and then put out a press release. So,
oh dear,
you know, wow. So I just deleted it and that was that. But that was a funny sort of case. I mean, one of the when you talked about spam earlier and asked about spam, what I said was the problems that we have at Wikipedia related to spam are different from the problems that, you know, standalone small communities would have. Standalone small communities worry a lot and have to deal a lot with spam bots trying to boost their Google rank by, you know, getting links to them on the web and things like that. In our case, we have, a lot more subtle things we have to look out for.
Members of Congress changing their biography or opponents' biographies.
Yeah, but also things like, people just coming in and adding, 100 links to their perhaps relevant website to perhaps relevant articles, and that ethically that's quite questionable. And then it's always annoying to me when I read, on some sort of guerrilla marketing blogs or something like that, well, here's how to use Wikipedia to get traffic to your website.
And it's just like, appalling. You know?
Yeah, it's really not cool, And then people get really mad if you put them in the spam blacklist. I mean, we have a pretty good incentive system in place, which is if the editors decide that you're spamming Wikipedia, we just put you in the blacklist and your links are all removed and no one can add a link to you on Wikipedia, which is pretty much a death penalty that's far more than what most people would want to have happen. But this happens after the fact, And
how do you keep your blood pressure from going through the roof, though? I mean, when you see stuff like this.
Death penalty.
Make me crazy.
The death penalty, yeah.
You must have been able to step back a little bit, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason that that I'm me is that I don't really have problems blowing my stack. I'm just a really kind of mellow guy.
And I think that somebody was required that somebody like you be doing this, because otherwise.
Yeah, I think if you got agitated, you'd end up yelling at people. And I mean, I'm human. I can't say my behavior is always perfect. You know, I do get annoyed with people sometimes. But in general, I think I'm pretty good. And in fact, that's a characteristic of the core Wikipedia community for the most part. Not everybody, we've got a few hotheads, but for the most part, people are pretty laid back because, you know, if you rose up through a culture where you write things and then other people hack away on your writing and you'll kind of like that, you're probably pretty laid back.
Do you, I'm wondering if when you see things like the stories in the news about the members of Congress editing their
that was big news.
Or Adam Curry. In some ways, that also is...
or me. Don't forget me.
Did you get in trouble for editing your own?
I edited my bio.
Did you get in trouble for it?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. You know, I asked somebody about this.
I mean, I will say my only defense there is that I edited under my very well-known username.
Right.
And didn't try to hide as a sock puppet or anything like that.
I modified my bio. There was an error. And I mentioned this on Twitter, and an editor from Wiki said, in this case, there was literally a factual error somebody had put in.
Yeah.
Something completely bogus said I'd written an article for Hustler magazine. So I just took that out. Is that wrong to do that?
It's fine. It's generally discouraged because it does give rise to a lot of questions, you know, and we find it's probably better for most people not to edit their own bio.
What should you do?
I would include myself in this. Best thing is leave a note on the talk page.
Okay.
And just say, hey, this is silly. You know, this is me and I didn't do this. Could somebody please check it?
Right.
And you know, that's fine. I'm a little ambivalent on the matter. It for a lot of people, if they start editing their own bio, it really does cause their blood pressure to go up. You know, it's really can be quite an upsetting thing.
Yeah, mine's pretty accurate, amazingly enough. But after that, I stopped, I swore off, and I will follow that process. On the other hand, this must have, in many ways, this validates the power of Wikipedia. If a member of Congress thinks it's important enough to change his bio or the bio of his opposition, that's very significant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really an amazing sort of thing. Although we think, in looking at a lot of the edits that came from the Senate, for example, some of the really juvenile ones, you know, changing to say Senator Robert Byrd is 180 years old. That didn't come, I'm sure, from another senator. It came from somebody in the office, an intern or something, just being funny. I'm not so sure that a lot of those edits came from the Senate, you know, orders themselves. But I just a couple of weeks ago, I met a very, very prominent senator who told me that he has his staff check his bio on Wikipedia every day. And they just look at it every day. And I don't know if they edit it. I haven't checked. But
that's probably sensible, given that his opposition might be modifying it.
It is sensible, and just keeping an eye on it, that's fine. And particularly if somebody approaches it in a responsible way and says, I understand that the bio about me is going to have some negative commentary. I just want the facts to be correct. I just recently met Ann Coulter, and this was essentially her complaint about her Wikipedia article. And, you know, I thought at first, I don't know, does Ann Coulter want it to be whitewashed? And, you know, I talked to her for about an hour, and basically she said, well, there's this fact that's in the article that's wrong and this fact that's wrong. And, I don't know what to do about it. And I said, well, I don't know. I'll tell some people and we'll fix it.
Well, you are even tempered. If you could talk to Ann Coulter for an hour, I'm impressed.
She's really sweet.
She was really nice.
Yeah.
She's not the pit bull that she portrays on TV.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she is, but she was very friendly. So
that's great.
We were, hanging out at a party, so I guess maybe we were in a lot of good moods.
So what about Wiki News?
Yeah, so Wiki News has been around now for a while. Unfortunately, because I'm really bad with time and dates, I barely know when anything ever happened.
Last week,
last week. It was something like last week or maybe a little sooner or later than that. But so Wiki News has been around for a while. It's growing quite quickly. It's a small community. They're doing, of course, following the same neutrality policy as Wikipedia, and we have had some interesting things happen there. You know, very good reporting on various things. It's still, even today, it still has something that has had all along, which is it's a little quirky at times. So in the very early days, you know, we would sometimes have days when, you know, three of the five stories were about Romania. Why? Well, because it was a contributor from Romania who was very active in the very early days. It's a little less quirky nowadays than it was, but we do still occasionally, you know, if you look at our headlines, we'll have a collection of things that are both major world news events and then something that you just say, well, that's interesting. It seems like a very local story. And that's just because, gee, somebody was interested in it in a local level. But as it gets bigger, you know, we start to have, you know, subgroups and things like that, and then things bubble up as part of the main news feed.
You have an RSS
the creation
feed.
Of,
go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, there's creation, RSS feed.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Did the creation of Wikinews cause you to change the architecture of MediaWiki a lot, or...?
No. I think it's one of the projects where some changes even now would be very useful. So, for example, the RSS feeds actually come from FeedBurner. That's an external, you know, website, because we don't support RSS feeds in the way that the Wikinews community needs them. So there is desire in that community to have some changes to the software. The same thing would be true, say, with the Wiktionary project. So this is a dictionary data, which is naturally should be very structured data. And right at the present time, MediaWiki is pretty much, you know, freeform text. And so there's a desire there for certain changes to support structured data. So
you've got quite a few projects. I mean, just looking on the main page of Wikipedia.org, you've got, besides Wikinews and Wiktionary, you've got Wikispecies, which is a dictionary of species, Wikiquote, Wikisource, which is a library of content. I mean, really, are these volunteer motivated projects or something?
Yeah, all
you
of them. And for all of our major projects, the way they came about for the most part was there was a certain desire within the community to do a certain type of thing, and rather than tell people, well, you know, that doesn't really belong in the encyclopedia, so get lost, we would say, oh, okay, you know, actually, you know, if people are putting way too many quotes into encyclopedia articles, so you go to an article about Colin Powell and you find, you know, 50 different famous things he said, that's really not good for an encyclopedia article. But rather than delete all that work, the idea is to say, oh, actually, Wikiquote would make sense to have a place where people can collect quotes. It's a different type of reference work. So all of our major projects have grown out of some kind of social pressure within the community.
I just love it. I mean, I have to say, the more I use it, the more I love Wikipedia and all of the little projects. I mean, the idea of Wiki Species is just great. Every species, I love it.
Yeah, and of course that one was a little controversial when we started it within the community, because
why shouldn't that be part of Wikipedia after all? That
right. Exactly. Right. And I think part of the reasoning is that there's a difference between a species reference for biologists and an encyclopedia article.
Right.
And the best example I can give has always been you know, the Wikipedia article about sharks has a section that mentions the movie Jaws and social and cultural impact of sharks. Biologists really don't care about that, you know. So that's one example of how it can be just a different type of work.
Right. What are you interested in working on next? Are you thinking about new projects, new ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really focused recently on Wikia and all of the different kinds of things that we can do there. One of the things that's always been very central to the Wikimedia Foundation's projects is the neutrality policy, and that basically say we're not political, and we're not going to do anything political. But I'm really interested in seeing how we can empower people using wikis to do things that are explicitly political. So campaign websites, you know, basic issue-based websites that are actually advocacy of a particular point of view, and, you know, allowing communities to come together to work on that kind of thing. And I think all of this is for me, it's a bigger part of the, or it's a part of the bigger movement, which is, you know, citizen participation, participatory journalism, free licensing, free culture. You know, all of this is part of the same democratization of information and knowledge. And I, you know, I'm just like, this is cool. So.
I am impressed because I tell you, Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia, clearly very even tempered and calm. I would have a very hard time with people messing with Wikipedia and doing all the things they do. I would blow my stack. He obviously
well,
doesn't.
He's right though. I mean, you do. I think that he was being generous. I think you do blow your stack for a little while, and then you decide, okay, am I going to keep doing this?
Right.
Or am I going to keep it mellow? Because otherwise you kill yourself.
Working
you know?
With the public is hard, though, you know?
It is. I mean, you know this, Leo. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the same reason why you shut down the forums now and then on the Twit site.
Right? Once.
Every once in a while, you just say, you know what?
I blew my stack.
I know they're loving what I'm doing, so I'm just going to keep doing it, and we'll just hold off on interacting this week. Yeah?
Exactly right. No, you hit the nail on the head. And ultimately, I always fall in favor of democracy and openness, and even if sometimes the things you hear aren't the things you want to hear, hey, this is the world, and a democracy is always better than a dictatorship. So,
yeah, well, you know, it came up in the discussion of the senators changing their own entries.
That's right.
So, is it just factual, and what does a fact mean to these people?
Right,
right,
right.
And it's very confusing. You know,
we may not agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he sat there at a party with Ann Coulter. How weird must that have been?
I don't, you know, who knows, Jimmy? He might have the same politics as Ann Coulter. I don't know.
Well, it's funny, you know, while we were talking to him, of course, I brought up the Wikipedia page on Ann Coulter, and it turns out that she was a roommate in college with Cindy Cohn from the CFF.
No.
Yeah. So, like, how weird is that?
That is really weird.
Oh. I know, it's extremely
now,
weird.
Do you think that that's a fact, or that's one of the things Ann was complaining about?
Boy, it's the kind of thing, it's too good to check.
I love it.
We could check. You know, we should have Cindy on. I mean, you know, why not? I mean, I guess maybe it's more of a Twit kind of guest, but, you know, we can check her.
She's the chief counsel for EFF and doing a great job there. And we will have her on one of the shows for sure. I can promise you.
Sure, that'd be easy. I mean, I know a bunch of people over there, so.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then we can ask her. So, yeah. Ann Coulter, do you know her?
So, really? Freaking school? No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't go. I certainly, yeah, just because I don't always agree with Ms. Coulter, I'm sure she's a wonderful woman.
A wonderful person.
Okay, so, there you go.
And now before we get chased off the air, maybe we better wrap this up and invite you to join us next week for another fascinating interview with movers and shakers in the world of open source, the little thing we call Floss Weekly. Chris DeBona, thanks.
Thank you, Leo. Thank you, everybody.
See you next time.